This is Radio Equal Shock with your host, Alex Smith.
We are back after the online Grow Your Own Food Summit with the organizer, Marjorie Wildcraft. Marjorie, remind us just once again where you grow your food and the way you operate your homestead experiments.
Hi, Alex. Yeah, I live in Central Texas, and my homestead is a research center dedicated to finding systems and developing systems for you to be able to grow half of your own food in a backyard-sized space in less than an hour a day. Pretty tall order, but we're working on it.
Last week you talked about getting your husband and son on board with aquaponics. Is it necessary to have everybody in your family on board with this prepper gardening style right from the get-go?
No. In fact, I'd say that the vast majority of people who consider themselves preppers, they have a reluctant spouse or reluctant children, and so they just, you know, go and do what they do anyway. With growing your own food, what I would recommend is just get started, and the family actually starts to get involved in it. One of the best ways to get them on board is when you're harvesting. That's one of the most delightful times, especially with kids. I can give you some of the best vegetables to grow for kids that'll make them almost be out there in your yard treating it like a snack bar. You know those little cherry tomatoes that grow so well in the summertime? Those kids will be out there fighting for them. And in the cooler seasons, those sugar snap peas are delicious, or strawberries. You know, if you've got some really tasty food out there, those kids will be out there playing with it. And that's one way to get them involved with it without it even being a prepper thing, right?
Tell us about your aquaponics setup. What have you done there?
Yeah, we built one, and I believe it's like 30 feet long by about 12 feet wide, and it has a 150-gallon fish tank. And, you know, I had always initially avoided aquaponics because it's a little bit high-tech. You know, it's going to involve motors and pumps and things like that, which actually ended up being the attraction for my husband and my son. That's the reason they like it, is it's kind of high-tech. I've really been impressed with those systems. They do require energy, you know, so you're going to be needing some solar power or wind power or the electrical grid, which is another reason we had avoided it initially. We were initially always developing our systems for a grid down or ultimate sustainability type of situation. But we ended up going with this. I have to say that it is definitely easier to grow food in the aquaponics system. Our first year of experiments are that way. It does require a little bit more watching. For example, if that pump goes out, your fish only have so long before they're going to need oxygen and die. So it does need a little bit more monitoring like that. But on the other hand, it really is easier. And part of that here in Central Texas, it was protected from the wind. It was protected from extremes of heat and cold. You know, the plants just grew better. The fish created the waste that fed the plants, and it worked really well. It's a good system.
Yeah, it's kind of a self-enclosed system in a way, but it is tricky and technical, as you say. I've been avoiding it so far. Let's talk about permaculture. That's another major contender for truly sustainable agriculture. Have you experimented with a food forest? And by the way, what is a food forest?
Well, I love food forests, and I have to say this is my particular favorite way to grow food. The idea of a food forest is you create an area that mimics nature in that you plant trees and bushes and vines and herbal layers, and every plant in there is edible or medicinal or beneficial in some way. And if you look at a forest does not need any tending, right? You go to a pristine forest, and the trees there, they drop their leaves, they're self-mulching. You know, they've learned how to manage the water that comes to them naturally. They don't need to be irrigated. And they all, you know, there's still some production of food, and animals and wildlife live in it. So what we try to do is create systems like that and mimic it and try to maybe have it slanted with a little bit more benefit toward us. They're more investment in time getting up and started because a lot of your fruit and nut trees are not going to start producing for 5 to 10 years. But once you get them established, they are much, much less work than annual gardens.
We all know gardening can help seniors maintain their mental and physical health much longer, but eventually we may not be able to handle the heavy work. How can we set up a garden to keep going with very little effort?
Well, that's it exactly. That's why food forests are such it's a real retirement plan, unlike Social Security, which we never really know if that's how long that's going to be around, right? So a real retirement plan is going to be to plant a food forest or to plant a small orchard right now while you've got the strength and energy to have that going. And then, you know, in your later years, it's a lot easier to just harvest apples than it is to be planting, doing all the work of the annual garden.
Let's talk about prepping for pests. I built two big raised beds out of some used lumber, but I put a wire lining on the bottom to keep out the moles that seem to love my rich garden soil. What else can we do to encourage pests to stay out of the garden?
Well, one thing is to have first of all, to have really good, rich soil will help reduce your insect problems. For moles and gophers, personally, I have a big problem with that. We have a lot of sand here, and I've been experimenting with using castor beans as a mole repellent and a gopher repellent, and so far it seems to be working very well. In fact, castor used to be known as the no-gopher plant. One of the realities of having a beautiful food source like that is you are going to need to have some fencing or some protection from everything else that loves to eat your food, like raccoons or squirrels or rabbits. So a good fence around your garden is just a reality.
Well, ours is about 7 feet high, and then we dangle little pieces of cloth and colored foil on the top of that to keep the deer from jumping in. But for the rest, we always plant a little extra for all the creatures that are going to eat out of your garden, whether you like it or not.
That's a very good practice. We rely very heavily on two dogs to do a large part of the protection from the predators here. In fact, one of the dogs is even really good at spotting overhead aerial hawks and barking and letting everybody know when the hawks are nearby, and I find them invaluable. They work all night. They mostly sleep all day. I don't feed them very much because I give them the butchering scraps from when we do butchering, and then they also just get whatever table scraps we don't eat, and then they find what they can. You know, they'll dig up gophers or catch a rabbit here and there. So they don't really require a lot of input, and they do a lot of work.
When I was doing part-time farming in eastern Canada, the only chemical I used was rotenone. It's made from ground-up roots of a South American plant, and Robert Rodale used it. I had to use it for the Colorado potato beetle. If you have a big planting of potatoes, we had a couple of acres. There's no way to squash all those bugs by hand. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a lot of work to manage a couple of acres of potatoes. You know, we all need to use as much organic processes as possible. The classic thing with something like a couple of acres of potatoes is to pay the kids. It used to be a penny a bug, and you'd have them go through the rows, and then they'd dump out their bugs, and you'd count them, and you'd pay them. That used to be the way to get rid of the Colorado potato beetle.
Could still work today if you get some neighborhood kids going. Well, last week you talked about not needing refrigeration or freezers, that we could just munch our way through the fresh food season. But I have to admit, there are times when we got so much food, more than we could give away or trade even, that we needed to freeze some, at least until we could catch up to our canning and drying. I like canning and dehydration because they don't depend on the grid staying up. What about you?
I do too. I'm a huge proponent of that. And fermentation also as another method of food storage. By the way, at the Homegrown Food Summit, we have one presentation by Kendra Lynn, who will be showing you how to do water bath canning and how to do pressure canning. And what I love about it is, you know, some people have a fear of those big pressure canners because they are these big, intimidating things, and there's these stories of them blowing up and stuff, right? There's no longer a concern about it. They've built them. They're now safe. But when you see Kendra, who's this slight and beautiful woman, just handling that machinery, you'll go, oh, I can do it. And we also have Wardy Harmon, who's going to be doing a whole thing on how to preserve food by fermentation, as well as the health benefits. It turns out that fermented foods really help your gut bacteria and help you to digest a lot better. So some of these techniques can help increase the nutrition content of the food you're eating.
Yeah, Wardy's a real gem. We've had her on Radio EcoShock, and I still check out her blog once a week, and it's important to keep up with that. One of my goals is to build a solar dryer. Do you have one?
We do. I used a model based on, I believe it's Appalachian State University created this model. There's lots of other ones out there, and it has worked really, really well. Now, we do tend to be a bit drier here in Texas, but I found that model even worked well during the summers when we've had a wet period. That is definitely a technique for preserving food that's very useful.
Farmers around here used to throw their peaches up on a hot tin roof on one of their sheds and solar dried them that way, and it did work. Now, let me ask you, do you let chickens into your garden?
On rare occasions, I do. One example was one time my sweet potatoes showed up with these strange-looking little beetles that had a shiny, it was almost looked like chrome shell. I have no idea what they were. They were little alien beetles. You know, normally when I see an insect outbreak like that, I think immediately that my plants are stressed and they need some nutrient, you know, some sort of nutrient thing, and I'll try to get them, you know, a liquid seaweed or some homemade compost or something. But in the short-term immediate, what I do is I let the chickens in there. And chickens are naturally insectivores. They love insects first. But I watch them, and as soon as they're done getting all the insects, then you want to kick them out of the garden because then they'll start scratching up the rest of your plants.
They do. They will scratch them up. So I'll bet after all your YouTube videos and your best-selling Grow Your Own Groceries course that you hear from gardeners all over the world, do you?
We do, and we have a very active network of people that contribute things that they're discovering and that they're learning, and we're very excited about that and want to develop that further. We're actually creating also a network of places just like our place where we're doing research on different ways to grow food. Other places that are doing that are starting to become networked together, and we're sharing results and making it available to everybody. I feel, Alex, this solution is going to come from you and from me and from, you know, I mean, anybody even, I'll tell you an example of Leslie. Leslie Parsons still works full time, and she only has a small garden. She's very passionate about squash. She's got about 200 square foot garden, and so she's been doing all these experiments with squash, and she's come up with a couple of varieties that are resistant to the squash vine borer, which is a horrible problem for people, and squash is such a good, important calorie crop. So even though she's only doing this part-time in a 200-square-foot garden, she has done really, really valuable research on a crop that's resistant to the squash vine borer, which is hugely important to the rest of us. She's publishing that work on our blog and making it available to other people and creating a whole discussion about it. And now other people are trying it and duplicating her work and getting feedback to her. This is how it's going to happen. Monsanto is not here to help us. The USDA is not here to help us. Unfortunately, our own government, while it does try, it's actually still really controlled by the big companies. This is going to be a problem that can only be solved by you and me and by individuals and neighbors working together. And that's the whole reason for what I do, is working at this grassroots level of coming up with real solutions for you to create your own food and medicine.
What would you say the number one concern people raise or the block that prevents them in their own minds from getting going on growing their own groceries?
I think most people think that it's going to be a lot of work and they're not going to get much production out of it. We're also such an instant gratification society. Like my son can whip on a guitar and hook up the Xbox and like in 5 minutes he's a rock star, right, with the thing. And that just doesn't happen in the garden. Most things take 2 to 3 months to mature. So it's adjusting to a lifestyle that's actually more human scale is a pretty big block. I would say, though, that's probably one of the things you're most hungering for in your life.
You know, it's strange. You start following your heart into something, as you did with personal food growing, and I could also call that personal liberty. Then you teach, you communicate, you connect, and almost suddenly you, Marjorie Wildcraft, have become kind of a one-woman movement on your own. Isn't it strange?
It totally is. I mean, if you'd asked me about this like 15 years ago, or if you'd have told me when I was a little girl what I'd be doing, I'd laughed. No. You know, life is an amazing adventure, isn't it?
Well, I want to take your DVD course. What's in it, and what does it cost?
Well, the video said it's two DVDs, and then it includes a CD-ROM that's a whole library of documents to support it. And what it's basically like is me taking you by the hand and taking you through my homestead here and showing you how I grow food. And I'm like, here's the water tanks we set up to catch rainwater, and oh, by the way, we overbuilt it. It was a huge mistake. Please don't make it this big. And then here's a place where we started a garden, and here's another place we started a garden, and these are the reasons why those gardens totally sucked and failed, but here's where we put our other garden, and this is working, and here's the gardening method that I use because this is the most efficient one, and I've tried all these other ones, but this is the one that I really like. And here's where I keep the rabbits, and I put them right here next to the garden because that way their fertility can help me, and it's real simple and easy to do this way. And here's my flock of chickens, and here's the reason I have them like this, and here's the dogs, and oh, look, this is the size fence you really need to to keep this out of the garden, right? And here's my orchard, and here's all the experiments with the trees we've done, and this is why these have died, and these have lived. And, you know, I just take you and show you everything that I go through, and even the butchering process. Here's how you butcher a rabbit, and here's how you butcher a chicken, and here's what you do with all the parts of those animals. That's it. It's really, you know, two video set that shows you all those components. And then again, that library, the resource library. So, you know, I talk about a rainwater collection system. We have a whole rainwater collection system ebook in there on how to build one. Or I talk about, you know, butchering a rabbit, and then we have a whole article on how to tan a rabbit hide so that way you'll be able to use those effectively. Or, you know, we've got 5 different PDFs on different ways to compost because fertility is so important. So that's what it's all about. It's at growyourowngroceries.com, and it's $37 for the full set. But I'll tell you what, I'd really recommend you go to the Homegrown Food Summit and watch that presentation I have on how to grow half of your own food in your backyard in less than an hour a day. Take a look at that and say, you know, that'll really inspire you to that you could do this. You could get those systems up and running in about 6 months and be producing half of your own food in less than an hour a day by next year.
I'd love to do it. Now, Marjorie, what will your next project be, or is it too soon to tell?
Well, we've got a lot of irons in the fire, and after this summit, we're going to look at what will have the most impact to be able to have more homegrown food on every table. We're looking at doing some stuff in partnership with Mike Adams of the Natural News and possibly working on some developing some programs to get local food into schools. We've got a whole, you know, and also developing that network of research organizations. There's a lot on the table. We haven't yet figured that out.
We've been talking with Marjorie Wildcraft of GrowYourOwnGroceries.com. Her DVD guide to growing in your own backyard is a bestseller. Her free YouTube videos on growing your own food are really popular, and Marjorie recently organized the biggest online summit dedicated to growing homegrown food. I'll be putting links to all of that in my show blog at ecoshock.info. Marjorie, thank you so much for helping all of us out.
Alex, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock. I'm prepping my own garden right now with raised beds, a better compost bin, nets for the raspberries, and 8 inches of mulch all around. Find all our past programs as MP3 downloads at our website, ecoshock.org. Don't forget to follow up on links for this week's show in my weekly blog, published Wednesdays at ecoshock.info. Or listen to the SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/radioecoshock. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening, and I hope we will get together again next week as we talk with Robert Scribler.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.